Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with The Second Tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search Second Tier in your podcast app.
And hit subscribe.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Luke de Jong, not too wrong, and Brucey is very much back. Let's all meet up in the year 2000. Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's Wednesday, 21st of February. I'm Pete Donaldson.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Jim Campbell.
Ah, 6 out of 10. Thank you very much to friend of the Ramble, E. Ali, for sending us today's intro line. You can become a friend of the Ramble by heading over to patreon.com/footballramble. And if you do that, you will be getting a special extended version of the Ramble today and every single Wednesday for just $5 a month. You'll also get access to the Ramble Discord, where our Patreon subscribers have recently been discussing Mark Zuckerberg being awkward at the UFC, which is very good indeed. The great Carly playing cricket as well. Not so good. Head on over to patreon.com/footballramble and sign up and get involved. It's the middle of the week. It's the middle of the working week. Luke Moore, how the devil are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And I like that you had the ambition in the intro that Marcus shows, but you didn't have the confidence or commitment.
No.
So therefore, you delivered it in a half-assed way, and then you looked at me and just kind of made a little face that, oh yeah, I should have done that.
I can do other faces other than little faces, Luke Moore. I have a little face. You also. That's all it does.
You also gave it your own sort of tepid review.
Yeah.
Did you do that under your own like YouTube videos?
That's 6 out of 10. Yeah.
Like, negative YouTube video comments we get.
That's
you.
High for me, to be honest. Six out of 10, to be honest.
If Pete's doing 6 out of 10 and stuff and he genuinely sincerely believes that in his own head, he's giving himself a holiday. He can't believe how
I'm
good
going down
got.
The shop that sells awards and getting like medals made up for myself. 6 out of 10.
Getting him engraved. Yeah,
this
good
is
idea.
My glass ceiling. So Man City beat Brentford 1-0 last night, moving one point behind Liverpool. Liverpool at the top of the Premier League. Erling Haaland has now scored against every Premier League team he has ever faced. And what I liked about the way that he defeated that particular demon in his mind, that he showed Christopher a bit of the ball, And Aya just got so excited he fell over.
He just collapsed.
Yeah. He went, "Do you want a bit of this? Whoa, you can't have it." And then he's off. He's completely
like a fucking human sandcastle.
Exactly.
I think he whispered that stat to him.
This is mine now.
I heard he was on. I got a good authority. He was actually quietly humming the Match of the Day theme tune.
I mean, is that an impressive feat? I mean, it sounds like an impressive feat, but he's not been here for very long. So how many teams has he realistically played against? He's been injured for a couple of months as well.
I mean, it is impressive.
It's more impressive because he's not been here for that long, surely.
Yeah, good
he's
point,
He's had very
actually.
Few, yeah. you know, bites at the cherry, isn't he? I think, is it 22 teams? Something like
but
that.
What if you, well, gonna, but what yeah. if you come on as like a youth team player and you score a goal, and then that stat is also true for you as well?
It's true. It does get, I suppose it gets, it's like a, it's a, it's a curve to it. Mm. It gets less, more impressive the longer you're
yes.
there.
Yeah.
But then his defence will be, well, I've done it across 20 odd teams, so that is an amazing thing. And then obviously now he's going to find it very hard to improve on that record consistently, because one, he's probably going to go somewhere else at some point. But before that, the teams, you know, you don't refresh as many Premier League teams, do they? So I mean, a couple of them that come up might have already been in the Premier League, and he might have already scored against them.
I mean, you'd be looking at like Leicester City, Leeds United, Ipswich, Southampton, West Brom. I mean, they are mainstays of the Premier League.
He'll be shitting himself about playing them, won't he?
If you are going to be taking that stat to your grave, I think you have to be aware that you really have to be beating those teams. You really have to be scoring against those teams.
On the game last night, it's sometimes amazing being a Premier League fan. Because the games are shit, but at least you can't watch them.
I actually went to France.
Did you?
Cheaper than getting a subscription for a month to Sky Sports.
Yeah, I'm exhausted. Really long night.
You could actually do that.
You could. Wasn't
That's a
worth
YouTube
it.
Video. That is waiting to happen. some young YouTuber will do that. Oh, I'm going to go get the Eurostar to Paris, watch the game, and then come back
again.
And it's the only way I'll legally be able
to do
it.
I like the fact that your idea of a young YouTuber thing to do is to go to France on a nice train. Oh,
I'm big on YouTube for that reason.
I would say...
What I like to do with my YouTube channel, it's got about 15 subscribers and I don't do anything controversial.
Yeah. Well,
it's just me having a nice sit-down.
To be fair, that sounds absolutely lovely.
Charting the noises you make as you get older, maybe?
Yeah.
I think I'd subscribe to that.
Well, one thing that does definitely happen as you get older is you do make a lot of involuntary noises, and it invariably annoys your wife. But anyway, I was going to say that on the game last night, it was kind of a really interesting situation, because as I've mentioned, no one could watch it because it wasn't originally selected for TV and it was rescheduled, which to me is like the laziest rule ever. I mean, if Sky Sports, given they have to have all the cameras there anyway for highlights and all the rest of it, just broadcast it. I know they only get a certain amount they can do, but like, it becomes more and more antiquated by the week. But for people who are just casual football fans, or maybe who support their team and they don't really care about an awful lot else, this game would have completely passed them by, because it was a routine kind of 1-0 win. Although Brentford did have a lot of early chances and perhaps could have made it interesting. Mm. But it was super important for Man City to get back on the horse, because although they've been in brilliant form and they've only dropped 2 points recently against Chelsea, the standard is so high now that you really have to get yourself back up there. That game in hand they had, they absolutely had to win it, because it's just a massive psychological blow if they don't. And so they did get it done. I particularly liked the endeavour that Brentford showed from the off, which is exactly how I think the team should start against Man City.
Their chances.
It's very similar to how they beat them last season as well, wasn't
it? It was.
Just waiting for their chances.
But what always seems to happen is if you have a team like that who dominate the ball, pull you all over the place, make it tough, and for those people who haven't even played football casually, trust me when I tell you, it's much harder without the ball because you do all the running. They just get knackered. And with Man City, it feels a bit like, unless it's going to be like a Halley's Comet event, where, you know, they go back, it's 0-0 or whatever, or Brentford nick one, they're always going to get a goal at some point.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about the circumstances of this game, though, are that the goal came from such a clear and obvious mistake, really. It's really unfortunate that Ayew has fallen over. I suppose part of that might be the fatigue that comes from chasing them so much. But it's interesting to see City not playing in a particularly convincing way, because they weren't maybe as sort of, well, as penetrative as they usually are. Obviously, they've still come away with 3 points. There's the old cliche about winning when you're not playing well, which they've, you know, very much ticked that box last night. And I think it's just sort of frustrating, isn't it, in terms of the title race, that they've not dropped those 2 points there. I think it's just a lot more interesting if City are playing catch up, because we, you know, we know how they motor into this incredible kind of like this gear at the turn of the year, where they put these massive long winning runs together. And I think we're all kind of sitting here thinking, well, that's not necessarily going to happen this time, just because it's happened so many times.
But they've won 12 in their last 13 games.
Indeed.
Yeah. I
think this was an opportunity there, certainly.
Do you reckon when no one's looking? It's a game that's not on telly and no one knows it's happening.
Maybe they've just got
so we've got a good chance.
Like Newcastle under Steve Bruce.
Yeah, exactly.
Remember, they just weren't that bothered. You kept saying, give it some welly when you're not on the telly, if I remember right. Yeah. But yeah, there was a real lack of welly, actually, from City last night. But again, they're never going to be like this for that long. So it does feel like one they kind of not got away with. But I've seen a bit of reaction from their supporters online saying that it felt a bit nervy, and it's been a little bit like that lately. And they don't maybe feel as invincible as usual. But again, they are very rarely unconvincing for very long.
They're a victim of their own success a little bit. They've raised the quality so high in the Premier League that other teams are starting to take the mantle, and then coming off the back of winning so many things last season, it's going to be difficult to get back up there. My highlight of the match was definitely Edison doing a flying catch from a header.
Oh, it's brilliant.
The Neville Southall, I call it, because he just always
doesn't
used to
need
do
to
that.
Do it.
Yeah, every keeper just usually just paws it away, palms it out of harm's way. But I just like to see every now and again a goalkeeper remembering that you can actually keep hold of the ball.
Yeah.
So they don't seem to. I mean, with that one, I guess it was quite a tame effort, though. Wasn't it?
He was in the corner, kind of though. I think he was at full.
Oh, yeah,
he was at
yeah,
full stretch, wasn't he?
Is it a full stretch?
For me.
Oh, your idea of full stretch might be different.
My little face and my little arms, full stretch.
Yeah. Let's have a little stretch out later and we'll see what it means. But a lot of the time now they don't try to catch, because I think they think if they drop the ball, it's a soft impact, so it's going to fall and it's going to be easier for someone to nip in there and get their fucking scraps, which you've got to do in football. So they try to punch, but in that case, it was lovely. It was one for the cameras. What I like about it is he caught it when the whole body was in midair. Yep. It's nice to see. But just to follow up on Jim's point as well, like, they won the game. They're winning games.
Sure.
And, you know, if it wasn't for an amazing goal line clearance from that Oscar Bob chance, who just looks like he's got ice in his veins. I mean, he doesn't. First of all, I still don't fully appreciate that he's a real player.
What are they doing in Norway?
Yeah, I know.
Why weren't they doing it before?
I know. And the second one was Phil Foden went on amazing, and it was almost one of the best goals of the season. And he was so annoyed with himself that he didn't finish it, that he immediately ran, legged it, sprinted straight over to the corner to take the corner. Mm-hmm. So I think he just thought, if I just get out of the way, people are going to forget that I should have finished that.
If I score from a corner now,
yeah,
it'll
make
be really
up for
impressive.
It. Yeah. But Flecken, who's every time I see Flecken, and I cannot emphasise this enough, I couldn't see him last night, but when I can see him, he makes a billion saves a game. Mm. And then last night, towards the end, Brentford were still in the game, of course, last minute. They get a corner, Flecken goes up, and he gives fucking Carl Walker 6 of the best studs down his shin.
Nice.
Not the only one.
Yeah.
Like, Neil Mopay and Carl Walker sort of renewed their hostilities again, didn't they?
And I think when you've got the sort of chaotic personal life that Carl Walker's got, you do attract a lot. It's like a maelstrom. Yeah. You do attract a lot of attention.
In the last game, apparently, he said to the referee's assistant, or it might have been the referee, something like, he's saying things about my kids. It's like, you know what? You probably shouldn't be doing that, Neil Mopay. Regardless of what you read.
Neil Mopay takes that part of his game really seriously. Yeah. You've got to say that.
What's the best thing you could say about a child on the field of play and not get in trouble for it? You know what I mean?
I don't think you should.
I think your children are high achievers. How dare you?
Yeah. Congratulations on the recent math test for little Tommy.
That's a threat. That's a threat,
isn't
it?
That's worse.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to make out. Show you can't say anything and it not sound terrible.
You literally can't say anything, for crying out loud.
No. Yes. You can't say anything these days.
Well, you can't. Pep Guardiola can't say anything these days because he's apologised to Calvin Phillips for making public comments about his weight. Phillips said that the comments were a big knock to his confidence. Pep Guardiola, I think it's quite nice to see a manager sort of go, you know what, on reflection, that's probably something that probably should have remained behind closed doors. He said, I never before said something in a press conference that I didn't say to the player. I'm sorry. Once in 8 years is not bad, but I'm so sorry. I apologise to him. I do apologise. I'm so sorry. Is that enough?
Sounds like you being late for a meeting.
Never let it from me. How dare you? I do apologise. I'm so sorry. I turn into Hugh Grant from the North East. Is this nice to see a manager kind of going, put your hands up instead of being defensive and kind of backing yourself into a corner and doubling Doon? It's just nice to see.
It is, but there's a little bit of singling down at least, isn't there? Because he's saying, I've never done it before.
Right. Look, okay. Yeah.
I've had my one.
I will apologise, but I also want credit for all the times I didn't do it.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know.
But can I, on a semi-serious note, I mean, it isn't ideal when people in authority who are in charge of or looking after professional athletes who are young men or women comment publicly on this kind of stuff. We've seen it be hugely problematic for people's mental health in different sports. It shouldn't be any different in football. Clearly, players will have a weight range within that they need to be in to be optimum in terms of their performance. That absolutely should, out of respect, be a private matter. Mm. And the moment anyone, whether it's a manager or a co-player or a chairman, whatever it is, starts talking about other human beings' weight, it's, I think, like hugely problematic and it should never happen. I actually think there should be quite big fines for it. But I like that he apologised. I understand that, you know, Guardiola probably does feel genuine contrition about it. And it's not something that should happen. I think it's very, very difficult these days in the public eye. For athletes anyway, let alone have to worry about that, because these weight issues, they seem to be, a lot of the time, they seem to be ascribed to like female athletes, right?
Yes.
And we understand why, but men can suffer from this kind of stuff as well. And a lot of the time, they're young men, and they need to have their mental health protected. And they don't want everyone knowing that stuff, because ultimately it can cause huge problems. I mean, even if Calvin Phillips is privately above his weight range for what he needs to be with the medical staff at Man City or West Ham or whatever, still an incredible athlete, and he needs to make sure he doesn't have any kind of thought distortions around that. So it's important that the apology was made, I think.
The term overweight as well is a bit of a misnomer there, isn't it, as well? Because it's essentially over his target weight for a very specified set of of parameters, really.
Whip his top off and he is in no way overweight.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a unfortunate misuse of language, and perhaps it's something to think about in terms of how they even describe such a thing.
I think they should sack him. I think he should be banned from being a Premier League manager.
And he's got to be filled with suet until he's massive, big Pep Guardiola. How'd you like that, Pep Guardiola?
They've got to turn him into a foie gras.
Can you imagine? He'd be fine with it.
Gloop
he'd
him.
Be. We need to Augustus Gloop him. Yeah. Pep Guardiola.
You've now got to spend a week in Willy Wonka's factory. That's what you got to do. I mean,
we started so well there.
I mean, also, I think like the physique of the modern footballer has got to the point where actually the sort of the ab riddled thin bodies are actually quite like not quite as useful as they could be. Sometimes you need a bit of weight behind you.
Especially
working in certain positions in the.
Is this where you put the disclaimer in about how you've got literally no medical qualifications whatsoever and you're
I don't care. We're not bound by any of these rules. I think we are actually technically bound by Ofcom, but what are you going to do? Anyway, on the topic of Man City, fantastic. Tom Huddleston scored against their under-21s from Man United's under-21s.
That's great.
He's 37, Jim.
He is, yeah. There's this new thing, isn't there, where you can have a sort of... an older player who is a kind of player.
He's a coach
in the under-21s, and we're seeing a lot of these situations. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm all for a retro footballer. You can have
a handful of players over age, but what clubs are doing now is that they're having a player run their academy, who's also had a brilliant career, to kind of guide and help and be like a mentor to different players and stuff. But there is something kind of, is there something kind of quite tragic about it? I don't imagine he celebrated the goal.
Yeah, it's it's an interesting decision for you to make as a professional, isn't it? It might be that, all right, well, this is a one last big contract I didn't expect.
He's a coach as well. He's a coach as well.
Of course. And it's a way into that. But it really depends what your ambitions are for the tail end of your career, isn't it?
Well, I think it's
going to be different on each individual's case.
At the end of the day, I mean, he's a coach, and you can coach better if you're on the field, so why not indulge? It's more the social media team of Man United putting that out with his old man
he's
face on it.
He's probably not happy about that, is he?
He probably wouldn't be, to be honest.
And he's the thing about Huddleston, loved watching him play. He's a real Rolls Royce, technically so good.
Great passer.
Yeah, brilliant passer of the ball, great striker of the ball. Couldn't really get around the pitch at the top level but that didn't limit his career, really, because he had a really great career. And it's great to see him doing that kind of stuff, and I'm sure he's got a lot to offer. But yeah, I don't imagine he'd be kind of, he'd be
particularly pleased.
He'd be advertising the fact that he's doing that kind of thing, because obviously he never played for Man United, so it's a bit like, it's a bit
it
like
looks
a,
really weird.
It's a bit cosplay, isn't it? Cosplaying as being a Man United
it
player.
It might be that a lot of other players see this and sort of go, "Oh, I fancy a post career career." Maybe
I definitely
your
do.
Savages
it.
Would
I
be back. Be Savage would be back in the dream
I'm not
Man
sure
United
what
team
got to offer in terms of brains or brawn.
Well,
did you hear that story that Dean Windass told about Robbie Savage?
Dean Windass, yep.
It's quite recently where he said that Robbie Savage, I guess it was Leicester against Hull when Windass was playing there. And he said that like, they had a game at Leicester and they had a big old bust up on the pitch. Like, Savage was winding them up the whole time and all the rest of it. And Windass was fuming. Mm. And the game finished. And Windass, cut a long story short, Windass went basically looking for him. I want to chin the guy, right? And he finally finds out where he is. He's in the players' lounge. And he goes up to Robbie Savage. He's about to give him both barrels. And Robbie Savage goes, "Oh, hi, Dean. Good to see you again. Have you met my mum and dad?" And his mum and dad are in the players' lounge next to him, right? So Dean Windass is like, "Well, I can't do anything here. You know, his mum and dad are here." So he's like, he just shakes his head, says, "Yeah, good game," and walks off. And as he's walking out to his car, one of Leicester City's like players goes, "You know that isn't his mum and dad."
It's kid stuff.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah, so he just wriggled
he's
out.
He's owed one. He's owed one then. And anyone who gets to him first can do it.
I think Windass should go after him.
Yeah,
now.
Massively.
I'd do a podcast series on that.
His son.
He hunts him down.
Him and his son, Windass and son, goes out in search of Savage.
Yeah, like Minder. It's like Minder. Yeah. And Josh Windass is the guy's name who does the theme tune and everything as well? I can't remember his name. The actor who plays the young guy in Minder, it could be him.
Okie dokie. Well, elsewhere in the Champions League, Marko Arnautovic came off the bench to score the winner for Inter against Atletico. We had a PSV 1, Dortmund 1 match as well. Arnautovic, I do still love that man, and I love watching him play football, and I'm just happy that he's happy, very briefly, after coming off the bench.
My legs hurt watching him like make up the ground for that shot. Like, it just looks so stiff. Like, he will be feeling that today.
He looks like the stick man. You know that kid's book? The stick man.
Yeah.
Hello.
Or like a reboot of Fido Dido.
From what I can make out, he's having almost like an Indian summer to his career. Mm. At Bologna and scoring goals, like a mid-table Serie A club, which is a lovely old job. On loan at Inter and having an impact
in the Champions League.
It's quite nice
at this stage as well.
The games last night though were, I mean, I watched the Inter game and it was just pretty thin gruel.
It was very dull.
And I didn't like Atletico's kit because it's the first time I've seen a kit that's essentially exactly the same shade of green as the pitch.
Right,
it's very, very odd to watch.
Yeah, the most enjoyable thing about it, so I started watching that game as well, because I would say Antoine Griezmann is possibly my favourite non-Vardy footballer currently active.
You're a big fan of the Vardy family generally.
Generally, absolutely. I love what they stand for. and so I thought, you know, Griezmann's always enjoyable. And I was kind of sleeping a little bit on the fact that Rodrigo De Paul is now essentially like cosplaying as Griezmann. They look really, really similar. He's done his hair in the same way. He was Messi's bouncer in the World Cup and generally is for Argentina. Yeah. And maybe he's kind of fulfilling a similar role here.
When I first saw him, I thought it was Griezmann.
Like, yeah, same.
It was a flash shot of him. And I thought, oh, it's Griezmann. He looks, yeah, okay. But it's not actually him.
It's not, but it's Rodrigo De Paul. We know that Argentinian players like the dark hearts. Perhaps they're embracing the old switcheroo.
Could be.
Body swap
comedy. Exactly. You can't get enough of him.
Well, Interman paid tribute to their former defender, Andreas Bremer, before the game, who died, was it yesterday? Age 63. Very sad to hear. Obviously, one of the most two-footed footballers of his generation and obviously a big mainstay in the Italian 90 Germany squad.
Oh, he was an incredible player. And for, you know, given the rivalry, particularly at that time, between England and West Germany, and particularly in that tournament, he was still one who was, like, fucking cool.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, we talk a lot about fullbacks and how attacking they are and how much of an effect they have on the game these days. And in an era where that wasn't necessarily the case, Bremer was sensational. People say he wasn't as good a defender. I heard Pat Nevin on the radio the other night saying that he played against him, he thought he wasn't as good defensively.
What a tribute.
Pat Nevin will know far better than me, but
say what again? A tribute.
I know. No, but he was a nice tribute overall. Right. He was just saying that, you know, he wasn't known for that. But I just thought he was brilliant all round. Mm. As a kind of 9-year-old watching the World Cup
and being gutted that England got knocked out, I still like loved Bramer, and I could not say that about basically every other member of that squad.
I remember that team feeling invincible, like it would have been impossible for us to get past them as close as it came. And he was a sort of epitome of that, just such an engine and genuinely ambidextrous as well, in a way that's rare in not just in football but in life.
He for those who are too young to remember this, he was ultimately a left back or a left sided player who predominantly used his left foot, but in the World Cup final he scored the winning penalty with his right foot.
And he often took penalties with his
right
foot.
Right in the bottom corner as well.
And he would take free kicks and corners with his left, but he could and did play on either side as well. I don't think it was that he had a particularly strong right foot. I think he was one of those rare people that is genuinely two-footed.
I think you said left foot for power, right foot for placing. That was his.
There we go. Right. That's nice. What a nice luxury to have, that is.
Indeed.
No, right. I'd just like anything. I'd like any of my limbs to do anything useful.
I can combine them for walking.
Exactly. Well, a Luke de Jong penalty and PSV a draw at home to Dortmund. Before the match, de Jong responded to being included in a list of the 100 worst Premier League strikers. How could I be a flop when I only played 12 matches for Newcastle? I mean, your lungs were a flop. You literally had a collapsed lung at one point, I seem to recall, Carl.
Your lungs were a flop.
Your lungs were a flop.
Awful fan base. look, awful.
Pete, what are your
memories of Luke de Jong?
Opinions and memories of Luke de Jong?
Very few. There's only 12 of them, clearly. But he just constantly, he'd come back and then he'd get injured. He'd come back and get injured. I mean, I would say at that point, the Newcastle United recovery involved Sulo bins that you sat in filled with ice. So
yeah,
there was that.
Yeah. And if this is the list that the Daily Mail did, then first, a couple of points to make on it. One is that Josie Altidore is number one, above Ali Dia,
right?
Which is a bit unfortunate.
That's
a professional footballer versus.
But I guess their defence, he scored 2 Premier League goals in 70 Premier League games. But they also do a list of the breakdown of which club has the most of the 100 worst strikers in Premier League history.
Oh, okay.
Guess which club's top?
Chelsea?
It's obviously Newcastle.
Is it? Wow. Really?
With 14 and West Ham are second with 12. West Ham obviously famously have found it very, very difficult to buy strikers who've been consistent. It's just, the top 5 clubs, it's Newcastle, West Ham, Sunderland, Crystal Palace and then Manchester City. Chelsea actually not. Chelsea are below Portsmouth.
Right. Well, I would say that Newcastle, for the record, had a few players that went elsewhere and did very well. So I don't think it doesn't tell the whole picture.
So it's Newcastle's fault, is what you're saying?
They ruined them. They
could not get the stink off.
It's not the
getting that
it's
bin.
Not the player's fault. They are tainted forever.
Put some hot water in that bin, for crying out loud. Right, we'll wrap things up for the first half. Coming up in the second half, loads of stuff. Potter versus Arsenal, more managerial merry-go-round, and a kind of Daily Star spotted feature from Luke.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
If you're asking me whether Harry the Hornet, who I presume is the mascot, should dive in that way, I think it's disgraceful.
Oh, please come
we'll
back.
Miss him.
Right?
We'll miss him in the game, won't we?
We will miss him.
Great guy.
On Monday night, Andy Brassel and myself recorded Ramble Reacts following Everton Crystal Palace's 1-1 draw. I massively encourage you to listen to that, even though the match wasn't all that. You'll hear Andy's opinion on whether Oliver Glasner is the right man for Crystal Palace. My opinion on James Tarkowski's attempt to flirt with his wife. Astonishing footage from Amazon.
It's amazing. Netflix.
Ridiculous.
It is amazing.
And also detailed analysis of whether Ray Lewington should be wearing shorts in February. In the Liverpool area, you can find that episode directly below this one in your podcast app, so go listen now. Luke Moore, you saw Steve Parrish and Oliver Glasner having a meeting yesterday in a posh hotel in the west of London.
That story's grown legs since I sent a WhatsApp to producer Finn.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I saw them having a meeting.
Right.
Like I saw them in a hotel at a table together.
That's worse.
And Steve Parrish.
Makes it sound like they're having a romantic day.
Well, they might have been.
All right, fine.
That's all right, isn't it?
That's all right.
2024, mate. Grow up. If it was a meeting, it kept being interrupted by Steve Parrish repeated. So here's the thing about people who work in football that I've occasionally been adjacent to, right? They're always on the phone.
A lot of phones.
Always.
Yeah.
And they always wear clothes too tight for them. That's the two things. So it doesn't matter how old you get in football. Mm. I mean, there are exceptions to this. Ray Lewington would be an exception. Roy Hodgson would be an exception. Mm. The old school don't, but the guys now who are kind of in modern football, but they're older, they all wear clothes too tight for them. So Steve Parrish was wearing a suit that was probably, in my estimation, four sizes too small for him.
Four sizes too small.
Oh, it was ridiculous.
Impressive.
It was like a Pete Donaldson suit jacket, but even shorter than that.
Right.
Trousers didn't get anywhere near his ankles. Those trainers with the white soles. And he kept leaving the table to go and take a phone call over and over again. And I mentioned to the guys that I was there on the table, about two or three tables away, and I could have got some more intel, but after a while, fucking opposite me, Jason Statham sat
down.
Jason Statham. So I got distracted. Oh, no, he sat down the table opposite me, so I was very, very distracted.
So are we looking at a possibility of Jason Statham being the number two at Palace, do you think?
Could be. The thing about Jason Statham, when you see him in the flesh, and he lives near me, so I do see him fairly regularly, he's fucking hard. He just looks like the hardest bloke.
Rangy.
His face looks like it's made out of rock.
He looks granity.
Oh, massive. I think he... And he's obviously got the old martial arts behind him and he's tough. I just think he... I'd love to have seen him beat the shit out of about four people in there.
Yeah.
In the Ham Yard Hotel.
Not me. One of them not being me. I'd love to see him beat the shit out of Steve Parrish and Oliver Glasner.
Yeah, in the Ham Yard Hotel. You're...
Don't name the hotel.
Why? You're allowed to be in the hotel.
I don't want people to go
you
there.
You don't.
It must be disappointing to be around Statham and that not happen. Like, anywhere where you are with him and it's calm must have a big, like, Act One vibe.
Yeah.
Like, whoa.
What's going to happen?
Surely
how's this going to escalate?
Going to be an inciting incident anytime soon.
I went up to him. I said, turn a table over, mate. And he just didn't do anything.
Is that the most exciting thing? I'd never want to see your action feature film. A man turn the table turner.
No, but that's how it starts.
That's
isn't
how it?
It
starts. Just push over
the
table.
Oh, you turned the table over and you've accidentally hit the toe of a big henchman.
Yeah.
And then things fucking happen, don't they?
I don't think the henchman shouldn't be getting involved. The only time a henchman gets involved is when the big boss man tells, not the big boss man, but the boss man tells you that you're allowed to have a fight. The henchman doesn't make his own decisions, surely.
Do you know? Well, that's true. Actually, he's just
unless they're a rogue henchman.
Yeah. He's just a puppet,
yeah. Which Statham is perfect for.
Yeah, I would
watch a movie called Rogue Henchman. With
he's a henchman.
Well, you think he's a henchman, but he's actually got more about
yes.
him.
Yes.
What I wanted to be is that guy in that meme where there's that big fight in that chicken shop and he's just calmly eating his chicken. I wanted to get stuck into my cheese and onion toasty, which I had for lunch while they're all kicking off. That's what I wanted.
No insider knowledge about how the Crystal Palace team is going to set up.
It would have been interesting. The only way that would have been interesting, mate, is if Oliver Glasnow had been linked to the job, and then I saw them and I could have told everyone. The job's he's already had it. He's already got it. So right. It's irrelevant.
Luke,
it's a total irrelevant.
A little insider thing about the Stack HQ calendar. Luke said Luke W F H, which usually means working from home, but in this case he was working from ham. So I'll
never work from ham.
I
was working from ham. It's a great hotel. People who listen to the Luke and Pete show will know. A top tip about when you're cutting about London and you've got meetings or whatever and you're working, go to a hotel. Yep.
They can't stop you because
they're worried that you're staying there and they don't want to piss
Get
you
in
off.
The room.
The toilet's always great and there's always free Wi-Fi.
There is,
Don't cut about in a crap Costa. Go to a nice hotel. Cool. They can't stop you. Some of them do stop you.
And Enagawa over the road from Ham Hotel is a great Japanese restaurant as well. So there we go. Elsewhere, Andy and myself did speak about Steve Bruce apparently being interested in becoming the next South Korea manager as he's keen to move overseas for his next job. Just closer to the cricket, isn't he, really? He just wants to get closer to the cricket. Philip Mann X says, managing in a country where one of the staple dishes is cabbage, you've got to admire it. It's a good point. Yep. Kimchi all over the gaff.
My favourite tweet from one of our followers, Rick, greeting this news, was Justin, who said, it's going to be some long nights ahead for Alex Bruce on Ancestry.com.
It's good stuff.
I mean, I'm shocked that this is of interest to Steve Bruce. I thought I knew the man. I thought I could predict his thoughts. Mm. I did not think it would involve such a huge kind of cultural adventure as going to manage South Korea, but he's up for it.
I think it's a massive breakdown in communication. I think he's had a conversation with his agent.
My career's gone south.
Yeah, I'm looking for a new career move. And he's like, and cue, I smell a sitcom.
Yeah.
Cue a madcap rush to the airport. Steve Bruce thinks he's going back to Malaga. All of a sudden, it's Korean Airlines.
And Young Jose.
Can I do it remotely? Absolutely not. Yeah. Absolutely not.
Well, he still will be playing his son, won't he?
Yes. It doesn't matter how old he gets, that guy's always going to get a starting berth. Recently sacked Sunderland manager Michael Beale has been caught by some internet sleuths, guys, using an anonymous Twitter account to post propaganda defending himself. It's Elon Musk,
It's incredible. It's some incredible internet sleuthing. It's by the Second Tier podcast, right?
I think they're in conjunction with the Sunderland fan site, I kind of feel like this stuff must happen a lot.
Yes.
And I think Michael Beale's probably been quite sloppy. And the reason I think...
You've got a burner, haven't you?
I haven't, mate.
That's why you think
do you know, have any idea how much I hate Twitter? I would not be subjecting
won't
myself
even call
to...
it by its rightful name.
Exactly, I won't. That's how much disrespect I've got for it. But I told you guys before, I was on TalkSport once with a pundit. I can't actually remember who it was now. And he was getting texts from Alex McLeish saying, can you keep mentioning my name on the show today because I really want a job? And I think it's so competitive out there, and I think they're so addicted to it, managers and all the rest of it, that they just desperately want work. And I think I reckon a lot of these guys do this. And I just think Michael Beale's been particularly sloppy. Do you want to explain, Pete, what he's actually been doing for those who haven't seen
it? Yeah, I mean, he's been on the Twitter, sometimes late at night. He's got his own... Twitter page called player_ID, which is apparently Beale in disguise, so to speak. And he's now deleted it, or someone's now deleted the player_ID. But right throughout the last few years, it's been posting pro Mick Beale tweets, which is very much right up our street. Defending him for not shaking a player's hand at the weekend, retweeting people defending Beale. If Sunderland sacked Beale, who in their right mind would want that job, etc. And going even further back, it posted stuff from when he was in charge of Rangers as well, screenshots of the league table and stuff. It's It's good stuff. I think Aaron Cawley has kind of set him up for a fall, basically explaining that give Michael Beale new business player underscore ID a follow and check out the website. You'll not regret it. This was back in 2017.
That's the smoking
gun.
That's
the piece of evidence that we needed.
Can I play devil's advocate here, Pete? And I think you're the best person to ask about this. Is that the worst thing a 43-year-old man can get up to on the internet?
No, probably not. And I'm a 42-year-old man, I'll have you know.
No, but he's 43.
I know. I just presume that's what you're asking me. I work with a few people who used to retweet and tweet very positive stuff about themselves.
I reckon it's all over the radio DJs.
Yeah, but it really saw them in good stead. Like, they were regarded as having a bit of a following. And then you kind of probe that following and you sort of realise, well, maybe it's not as strong as we think. Maybe they're just really busy with burner accounts. Still working. Yeah. Still getting in that money.
I think the most damning thing for Michael Beale is that in one of the tweets, he talks about the fans being really entitled.
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting insight into what managers actually think about the fans of the clubs they manage, because you're never going to get that any other way.
Moyes has done that, though. Hodgson said that. They both said it.
Yeah, all right. But they've couched it in vaguely critical language.
Talking about how good they are.
Overtly critical language because he thinks it's anonymous. And the thing is, right, this will come up in his next job interview. But how on earth are you going to
get another job interview? The only job he's getting now after this is he's going to get a job down, and I don't mean any disrespect here, but he's going to get a job where he's going to be a big name for that level. People are going to go, fucking hell, we're going to get Michael Beale, and it'd be like conference or something.
Ross County?
Oh, that'd be brilliant. By the way, I hooked up with Derek Adams on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I'm glad he says it. I'm glad he said LinkedIn right away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, see how it goes.
Hamyard Hotel. Do you want to go upstairs?
Yeah. That's not what it's for.
Yeah, I want to get Derek Adams involved in the Ramble somehow. Right. He's the right guy for us.
What would we do with him? What would you do with the Derek Adams, Luke?
I want him to say, I've listened to football podcasts a million miles better than this.
Elsewhere,
a million
in other places north of the border, to be exact. Neil Warnock has signed Junior Hoylett for Aberdeen until the end of the season. You love to see Canadians going cold places. It's where they live, it's where they exist, it's where they're going to flourish.
Like huskies,
yeah,
aren't they?
Exactly.
Just rolling around in the snow.
Bloody lovely
loving
time
it.
For crying out loud.
I like that with this. So Junior Hoylett is playing. It's not his real name, by the way. You know, his real name is David Hoylett.
Right, okay, fine.
I don't know where the junior nickname comes from, but just as an aside, he's played a handful of games for Vancouver Whitecaps last year. And the great thing about this is, Junior Hoylett's had a good career. You know, I'm not slating him. He's an international player and all the rest of it. He played at the top level. But there's a very big feeling here that Neil Warnock just wants some company.
Yes.
Up in Aberdeen. Yeah. Of someone he knows. Just
talk
wants someone
QPR
he knows.
Days.
Yeah. Yeah. Just wants to be. It's a long way away from home, as we know. Aberdeen's a very, very isolated place. He just wants a bit of a familiar face around, doesn't he? To help
someone
him.
To and carpool so,
and,
with.
And yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think that's fair enough.
Yeah.
You know, he's still got a file of facts with all his contacts as well.
Definitely.
He's been thumbing that for a fortnight.
I think it's an old school Rolodex.
Oh, yeah. That's what I meant.
It around. Yeah. Is that what you meant?
I did mean a Rolodex.
Yeah, because you said Filofax, but you made the motion for Rolodex. Mm. Yeah.
What's the difference between Rolodex? Hang on, a Filofax is like a little kind of...
It's a little book,
isn't it, in a Rolodex?
Rolodex spins on like an apparatus.
There you go. Arsenal's first Champions League knockout game since 2017 takes place tonight at 8 p.m. Porto versus Arsenal. Jim, you excited? Bit of trepidation in your soul about this one?
Both of those things, absolutely. Yeah. Porto aren't in the best of form at the moment, but we came unstuck against Sporting in the Europa League last season. You can't underestimate anyone at this point. And also, Mikel Arteta doesn't have the best record in knockout competitions, so it's something to be wary of. They need to be really, really focused on this. The Athletic did a rundown of Arsenal's last six or seven exits at the last 16 stage.
Why did you read it?
I was just curious to see how far we'd done come.
Part of your therapy process.
Good God. I wanted to reach back through time and just slap them all with a big frying pan. It was genuinely quite sort of unsettling to read back through it. I want to avoid that at all costs. But I think there is still this kind of spectre of that hanging over Arsenal in the Champions League, and it's something they have to dispel. But I am looking forward to it. It's been a long time, obviously, since we've in relative terms since we've been in a knockout game in the Champions League. So I'm excited, and I'll be on Ramble Reacts as well. So if it all goes terribly and you support Spurs, you'll have a nice time. Something for everyone.
I'll just let you know. I think there are several Arsenal fans out there who would take some comfort from listening to you if Arsenal do lose. I don't think it's just Spurs fans. I think it's everyone.
I think we can all get a slice of that.
This game and this show makes a mockery of us all. As we always say, what's good for the Ramble isn't good for your club. You know, I personally would quite like Arsenal to lose badly tonight, so I can listen to that. Yeah, but it's nothing personal. I just like to listen to you. Go over it. You know what I mean? We have to all admit here that we like, you know, nothing serious, but we do like a good bit of moderate suffering from our friends.
Mm. We also like watching the big teams fail, right? That's one of the things that I think a lot of fans don't understand. If they're doing well and their team starts getting criticised and they sort of kick off about it, like Arsenal fans do it, City fans do it, Liverpool fans do it. You can't be liked when you're doing well. You just can't have it.
Nah, it's not part of the fabric.
You have to just accept it.
Mine does extend beyond that, though. You know when you really badly hurt your elbow? Mm. That was a funny story.
Oh, when I really badly hurt my elbow. Which time?
I'm just saying that you can get a good amount of pleasure with some...
Straight up Schadenfreude.
Yeah.
Of course, if it's a funny story.
The Germans should invent a word for it, shouldn't they? I'm looking forward to the game tonight. I think Jim's, you know, to be semi-serious, as I say, it is a good measure. It's a good kind of acid test for them. I think you know, what Arteta's done at Arsenal is brilliant. No question about that. And he's really kind of made them believe that not just that they can achieve, but the standards that he has set are so high and the players have had to fall into line behind that or get the fuck out of town, right? And that's really something that shouldn't be forgotten. I mean, he's done it with players, high-profile players already. But there's an element with the Premier League and the way it's structured and the way that the big clubs are that actually, how much are we learning from Arsenal knocking over a load of shitty bottom half of the Premier League teams?
Indeed.
Not that much. So to go away to a club who perhaps don't have the budget but are storied in this competition, who have won this competition, and obviously from here on in for them in the Champions League, Arsenal, it just gets harder and harder. That's a really interesting thing because it's a real fucking test. It's a different type of test as well.
Absolutely. I think that the last few games have been very useful in terms of the rhythm and you know, forging those connections that have been growing over the season in terms of the fluency of Arsenal's play.
And they've been good against the big teams in the Premier League,
They have been good against the big teams. And also, an interesting thing that happens a lot is that teams set up with essentially, you know, 11 men behind the ball to try and frustrate, and Porto aren't going to do that. No one in the Champions League is really going to do that. So it's going to be a really different type of test. Also, you know, it's quite dangerous sometimes when a team aren't going so well in the league. Yeah. It's a bit of a holiday from it. And especially if you go into this game as the sort of relative underdogs, there's the element of not being so much to lose. It's an ideal level of opponent, I think, at this point. If Arsenal were facing a Bayern Munich or a Real Madrid or whatever, it would be a very, very different story now, very, very different set of pressures. But that said, you've got to make sure that you put it away and you've got to, you know, respect the opponent. Evan Nielsen's a very good player. They've got players that can hurt you. I am just excited about it in a really quite little boyish way as well, which is to be embraced.
Mm. Definitely.
That's what it's all about, right?
Definitely what
it's why
all about.
We're here.
And did Rio Ferdinand make the game in the MP?
Rio Ferdinand ended up on a Ryanair flight out to Porto with some Arsenal fans.
It's a great leveller, isn't it?
It is
when
a great leveller.
When the big highfalutin types have to get the Ryanair flight.
When there's only one flight.
You can imagine the conversation. Rio's going to be speaking to the admin person, the booker at TNT, and they're going to have to call him and say, I could only get you on the first thing in the morning Ryanair flight, I'm afraid. And Rio's going to have kicked off.
Yeah.
But these days, he probably won't kick off. This is why it's great, right? Because there's no way on earth he's flying Ryanair when he's a player.
He did have extra leg room.
He did.
He was at the front, but
that does mean, as a tall man and as a man who's got a bit of bunts, he might be paying that extra 12 to 20 quid to get that extra leg room. But I would say that just makes you more visible. If you'd have sat at the back, no one would have noticed. You could have gone about your day doing Rio Ferdinand things in the back of the Ryanair flight, and nobody would have noticed.
I think you should always be able to suffer through a couple of hours. It's not a long flight, you know. Porto's about
3 hours, is it?
Two and a half, probably.
Not far.
But then and you've got the Ryanair probably late at the terminal, and you're probably not going. There's probably no VIP ushering through. It's risky.
And the point is, it's just very, very different to when you're a top-level player and how you get treated, right? I mean, it's going to be very, very different. To be fair to him, he seemed to kind of embrace it. And I think he's probably... I've done a little bit of work with him, and he's a very, very personable guy. Right. I'm not saying he's a terrible guy or he's a big-time Charlie or whatever. I don't believe him to be so. But it's just quite funny that he got a load of stick from a load of fans.
Yeah. He handled it really well, to be fair to him.
Yeah. So he basically got told... Arsenal fans have taken issue with the fact that he says that Saka isn't quite world class yet. And what Ferdinand has done, he's like doubled down on that, hasn't he?
That's his brand. Oh, yeah.
He said he means that he's, you know, we've not seen him do it in the late stages of the Champions League.
Well, he's not playing.
Well, exactly, yeah. And he's also got 3 goals and 4 assists in 5 games in the Champions League this season. Mm. So, you know.
He's doing
it's
it.
It's a bit of a silly
argument. I think this is a conversation we can't realistically have without Marcus here because he'd be gutted. But it depends on how you define world class, right? Mm. Some people would say world class, they need to be in a squad, a world 11 or squad, for their position, that's it. So there's only 2 world-class players or whatever. I wouldn't say that.
Bit of an ethereal thing anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I guess also, he's probably had a more successful international career than Rio Ferdinand. So if he reckons he is...
Come on, Pete.
What? He has.
Well, I mean, he's
got further.
Ferdinand's got loads more
caps. He's got further, though, hasn't he? He's got further.
Yeah, true. I guess it depends how you judge it. It's a fair comment. Fair comment.
Thank you. You rolled back from getting very angry.
I'm not going to double down.
I was hiding behind...
I learned that from... you can't double down when you've been hanging out with Jason Statham.
I was hiding behind my tiny hands. The Telegraph did a piece about David Rea and his massive hands. Apparently, Rea turned up at Blackburn aged 15 and they were going to reject him for being too short. But then he gets out of his massive pockets, his massive hands, and they instantly gave him a trial as goalkeeper.
Yeah. The way this story's framed makes it sound like he just turned up at the stadium.
Yeah.
Just like demanding a trial. This little kid from Spain.
Yeah.
Like, piss off. Where are you going?
You've got like a picture
short stuff. Yeah, exactly. Then out comes Carter in
removing tyres with one hand.
Right. I've got an idea for a movie. Ratatouille, but it's not a rat.
No.
It's a child with gigantic hands. It does say a lot about the media landscape in 2024. This isn't even in the top 50 weirdest things the Telegraph have done.
Yeah.
So he's got massive hands and it hinders him as a chef? No, he's a goalkeeper. He's not a chef.
David Spader hands.
They were very, very big for his age. Now, do you know what? That is a huge talking point in NFL. When the draft comes around and the combine and the players have to prove themselves to become professional players and move from college football into NFL, particularly quarterbacks, there's a lot of talk about hand size.
Is it? Right, okay.
There was something that dominated the news cycles a few years ago. I forget the player now, but it was a quarterback who'd done really well in college football. He hit all the numbers, everyone loved him, and they measured his hands, and it was like, are his hands actually 8.5 inches or are they 9.5 inches? This is really
important.
Deflate
gate, and they went, but in the hand.
That was a deep dive on it. A deep dive, mate. They are obsessed with quarterback hand sizes in the US.
Rea is apparently a size 11, which is the biggest size you can get without them being sort of custom-made.
Especially made. Well, then, I didn't even know you got like hand sizes.
I didn't know that either. But have you heard him speak?
No.
He sounds like he's from the Northwest. I was not expecting it.
Nice.
I'm David Rea from Spain.
He's taking the piss out of Ramsdale, is he?
Well, no, he's just been... Because he was at Blackburn since he was very, very young. So he's been in... He grew up in that area, essentially. Or spent, you know, most of his adult life so far in that area.
Right. Okay. Well, I remember chatting to David Seaman, and he does a lot of work at Arsenal. Apparently, he was having a chat with Ramsdale, and Ramsdale was pointing out that it can't have been Rea, but he was pointing out some goalkeeper who has really small feet, and he's laughing at his small feet, which is interesting.
I can remember when I worked at the sports shop as a Saturday boy. They used to provide boots for a lot of players. Mm. It was like a side business they had, and I remember me and my friend Mark. We packaged up the football boots for the delivery or whatever. It was for Middlesbrough at the time,
right?
And we packaged up Janino,
tiny
boots.
Fella.
Oh, wow,
Janino Palista. They were the smallest boots I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, they must have been about a size 5. It was mad, absolutely mad. And obviously, on the other end of the scale, was it Carney who had like a ridiculous pair? He had like size 15 or something, didn't he?
Well, your feet never stop growing, do they?
Famously, yeah, exactly. I'm a size 22 now.
Yeah. Elsewhere, Liverpool versus Luton tonight at 7:30. A lot of players are ruled out for this match. And also Sunday's Carabao Cup final against Chelsea. Curtis Jones, Jota, Alisson as well. So that's going to be an interesting tie. Michael Owen claims that Darwin Nunez's chip goal at the weekend proved that he's not a great striker. I mean,
yeah, it was an interesting. I don't think it's as mad as this sounds because he was saying that he essentially went for the hard option,
right,
which you're just statistically less likely to score.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you've got loads of material on Owen if you want it. I think if you're an enthusiast who likes to undermine Michael Owen at every turn,
he'll do
which
it,
we are,
yeah,
you've got more than enough material for that, and I openly encourage you to do so because he's a risible guy. I don't think this was that bad. No. I thought it was quite an interesting insight, actually.
But it was, but he can't even make a decent point without making it sound like it's a terrible point. It's an incredible skill.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah,
it dresses it up. Xabi Alonso has been heavily linked as Klopp's replacement at Anfield. Has he been seen in a hotel near you, Lucky Moore? Any news?
Haven't seen
him.
Right,
okay.
I mean, he'd be up in Liverpool, wouldn't he, for that kind of thing. Although a lot of the business probably is done in London, so I'll keep my eyes peeled. Yeah. Just so you know, I'm not in that kind of hotel every day or anything.
Okay.
I mean, It's probably once a month, probably. So but statistically, I'm
unlikely
to see
them. You're not going to see
them,
right?
But on the just before you go into the Xabi Alonso things, very quickly from me, you mentioned there the players that Liverpool have got out. I don't know if we can watch tonight's game on the telly, can we? Probably not. Maybe we can.
Well, it depends. I mean, you can always get a Eurostar if you're committed to
get the Eurostar.
I'll probably think about it.
A great euphemism for illegal website streaming.
It's not technically... Yeah,
I'm off on the Eurostar.
I watched it on the Eurostar.
Eurostar.com.
It's not technically on the TV, right. But I do think, regardless... I'll tell you what, I'll even go as far as this, and I think Luton have been quite good recently, and they deserve a lot of credit, and we have given them credit on this show. Luton fans, go and pick another three Liverpool players at random to remove from the team and you're still going to get beat.
Yeah. Right, okay.
You're going to get beat and it's probably going to be an easy beating. Yeah. That would be my take.
Well, on Xabi Alonso possibly heading to Anfield or somewhere else, Alonso was lined up for the Bayern job as well. Fabrizio Romano breaking has just revealed that Tuchel will leave at the end of the season. So maybe they won't be looking for that stopgap Ole Gunnar Solskjaer solution that reared its head a couple of years ago. I mean, it's bad for the ramble. What's bad for the ramble is bad for the world, I think.
We need to see. I mean, just imagine for a second Harry Kane getting this big move to Bayern Munich. They don't win the league, and by the end of the season, be managed by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. It's remarkable how football does
this. We were eating good with the Mourinho rumours.
I'd probably still choose Mourinho.
Oh, yeah. In terms of... I was a Bayern fan, I'd choose Mourinho.
No, from the ramble.
If I was me, I would choose Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Especially as he's one of the architects of their greatest trauma. Mm. It's an incredible thing to even exist as a rumour.
Mm. Yeah, so I would take... Ideal scenario, I'm taking Mourinho at a Premier League club and Solskjaer at Bayern Munich. If I can't have that, I'd love to see Mourinho at Bayern Munich.
Where's Mourinho landing in the Premier League? In your fantasy?
Arsenal. Obviously, because you're
sure,
here.
Of course.
No, I think probably Man United. I think Marcus convinced me of that. We had a big debate about whether Mourinho should be at Chelsea, Man United. Marcus convinced me that it's just funnier because loads more Man United fans would hate it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of Chelsea fans, even the most hard-hearted, could convince themselves that Mourinho has done amazing things, which of course he has at Chelsea, and it's great to have him back. I think they could kind of give themselves a little bit of a talking to. May not, I don't think, can do that. Yeah. But on the Tuchel thing, I mean, that could be, the thing about Alonso is he comes across as a very classy guy, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's already said, you know, as a gentleman's agreement, I'm coming to Liverpool, I loved it there, I want to be there, it's perfect for me and after Klopp. And Jim, you said this to me yesterday, there's something of the evil empire about Bayern Munich, and for Alonso to do what he's about to do with Leverkusen and then just chip off to Bayern Munich would be really, really disappointing. And if it was someone else, maybe, but I think with Alonso, he doesn't come across as that type of character.
If the decision is unmade, it suits Bayern for that uncertainty to be in his mind, right? And we know that they will happily behave in that way. A lot of big clubs do that, try and unsettle their rivals domestically, especially if they're the biggest fish in that pond. See it all the time. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little bit of gamesmanship here with the timing of Tuchel's announcement as well, trying to just, you know, galvanise the Bayern players as best they can and put that idea in Alonso's head. Who knows? Who knows? But I personally, I would like to see Alonso just stay at Leverkusen. Mm. Sort of steward them in the Champions League, build on what he's created. I mean, I saw Andre Vierge-Boas mentioned as a potential kind of ghost at the feast type figure that Alonso might have in mind. Because if you move to, you know, if you make a big move like that really, really quickly, things can be quite unforgiving when you hit the first rocky patch. And every manager goes through rocky patches at every club. It's an inevitable part of it. I personally think it'd be great to see how far he can take Leverkusen, but you know,
I remember when Vierge-Boas moved to the Premier League and Brassel saying at the time it's too early for him, but he can't resist it. Like, it's so much money and it's such glamorous.
It would be a hard thing for anyone to turn down.
But from Alonso's point of view, the two landing spots that people talk about with him are Liverpool and Real Madrid, right?
And Bayern as well, obviously.
Yeah, okay, fine. But I mean, he's linked with Liverpool and Real Madrid for obvious reasons, right? As well. And with the Liverpool thing, I think you're right to talk about or mention or allude to the amount of managers who've gone in somewhere after a big legacy manager and it's been tough. But from Alonso's point of view, he may not want to take it for granted. He may not think, if someone comes into Liverpool and they get it right and it's not him, that opportunity is gone X amount of years, right? So that's how it is. Like, when you hear of like people getting opportunities to do something they wouldn't have expected necessarily, because he's still at the start of his management journey, you have to put yourself in their mind and understand it's very difficult. You don't know how long that's going to come, whether that's ever going to come around again. So, yeah, he's got a big decision to make. I take the point about Leverkusen. I do think that there's a chance he may do another year there. I wouldn't like to see him at Bayern. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah, I'd like to see Xabi Alonso doing Le Mans in 2028. So there we go.
Yeah, because didn't Aaron Rivera-Boas do Paris Dakar?
He did. Yeah. Did he not try Le Mans as well? Did he try?
Oh right.
I don't know. I may have got that wide of the mark. Did he go to China for a bit? I can't remember.
Yeah, he was in China. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much to you and for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Aircast Creator Network. Patreon subscribers, do not go anywhere. Keep listening for Ramble Uncut. If you're not a Patreon subscriber, sign up to get Ramble Uncut every single Wednesday. Just get on over to patreon.com/footballramble, a thriving community that is just getting better and better with every week. Lukey Moore.
I totally agree. I mean, it's a burgeoning, bustling, growing
marketplace of ideas.
Fans. Well, if I was going to say something that's sincere about this, I would say that it's amazing because it's the Discord, particularly, is an area where people can talk about football and there's no animosity.
Yeah.
There's no poisonous
it's
stuff.
Organic.
It's like very, very good natured. Yeah. People embrace their differences and their different teams they support and. You know, they even put up with some of my dreadful opinions from time to time, which is very good of them. So it's a great place to go. It's a very, very cheap place by today's standards of the internet to go and chat with fellow football fans, not just about the Ramble. There's loads of different stuff you can talk about. And it's well worth doing. It's patreon.com/footballramble, as Peter has already said.
Less than a cup of coffee in Hamyard. Also, follow us on X, TikTok, YouTube and Instagram @footballramble. And you can also follow us on Spotify. Thank you very much. To you, Lukey Moore.
No, thank you. Pleasure's been mine.
And thank you very much to you, Jim Campbell.
You are welcome, Pete Donaldson.
Ta-ta.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app.
And hit subscribe.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in...
opinions.
We do that in every episode, too.
We're professional, unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.